demand.
Hi, I'm Jim Stroud.
And this is Karen Matinen, and welcome to the Recruiter's Lounge.
The Recruiter's Lounge is a podcast of news, interviews, and commentary on the recruiting industry. And it was designed with you in mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your time in the Recruiter's Lounge.
SGA, Executive Tracker Pro, is an online service providing contact information on thousands of executives at each of the top public and private companies. And hear this, people. It is 100%, yes, 100% telephone verified, constantly updated, highly accurate, and comprehensive. With SGA Executive Tracker Pro, you have at your fingertips the contact information of C-level executives and all of those essential director and management level personnel that you just can't seem to find anywhere else. Listen up, people. SGA Executive Tracker Pro can dramatically shorten the amount of time it takes you to find the best leads. Hey, pick up the phone right now and give them a call. Tell them Jim Stroud said I could have a free 15-minute online demonstration of your product, and I want to see it right now. The number you need to make that happen is 518-843-4611. That's 518-843-4611. And, of course, you can also find them online at www.sgaexecutivetracker.com. Affinity Circles is the leading provider of exclusive social networks for established professional organizations seeking to promote career advancement opportunities among their members. Today, preferred employers such as Merrill Lynch, Oracle, and TiVo are using Affinity Circles to source qualified passive candidates from over 140 top-tier organizations like Stanford, Dartmouth, and Golden Key Honor Society. To learn more, visit affinitycircles.com. That's A-F-F-I-N-I-T-Y circles.com. And now, on with the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Your host, Jim Stroud of the Recruiter's Lounge, is here. And sitting next to me, as always, as she should be, it's Karen Matinen. How are you, Karen?
Hi, Jim. How are you? And then I'm doing fine. What about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm sort of laughing. I was sort of chuckling at this video you sent me. It's about the job market 2009. It's for people. I'm going to put a link on the podcast, on the blog post where this podcast is being held. But there is a video that Karen sent me from off of YouTube that shows this Spanish worker drive up. And he looks like the stereotypical migrant work or day labor.
Inverse.
Yeah, he drives up in his truck, and as he drives up, there are people standing on the curbside in business suits and looking like corporate America, and they stand there. They're looking at him kind of crazy. So he gets out of the truck, and he says, okay, I need an accountant. And they jump up, and he says, okay, you get on the truck. Or I need what did he ask for, Karen?
CPA with this, and the corporate. Everybody's fighting for the position. They're all like, oh, no, I want to know. It's my turn. It's like this huge fight, you know?
Yeah, and he tells him to get on the truck. It's done in reverse. But I thought it was amusing, but I didn't get the punchline of it. What was the punchline of it?
I think the major punchline was how, I mean, seriously, a lot of this is to do with what we were talking about, but the punchline is how things are changing. We've so taken all our jobs overseas that now the foreigners are the ones who are now holding the bag for us.
Oh, that's the point they were making. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, remember that comment I would write to you guys a long time ago? It was about a couple of months ago where they were saying that in about 20 years that all of our heavy-duty, white-collar, commercial, I mean, service jobs are going to be, you know, recruited out to foreigners or into foreign land.
I remember you saying that, and I've read things like that. But even though they may outsource a lot of different things, I don't really see how you can outsource creativity. Or I don't see how some companies will outsource sensitive roles. Like if you are, some kind of technology role or maybe even certain accounting roles. I mean, you don't want the secret sauce out across somewhere else. You know, certain things you want to do inside of the company.
Here's the sad part that already has been done. Right now, your credit is being outsourced in India.
Really?
They have your credit information. They already are doing that. And by the way, we've already had some issues of breaking into people, hacking in from all these foreigners of your information.
Now, see, that's scary. That's about as scary to me as when I read about this manufacturing company in China.
Mm-hmm.
They produce computers, and they test them once they're assembled, and they ship them over to the United States. I forget what company they do it for, whether it's Dell or some
evil.
Other. But when they're testing these computers, viruses are getting in them. So when
you buy
the computer, they're viruses. Now, they're not doing it on purpose, but if they are testing computers with software that they don't know is infected with some kind of computer virus, they're just spreading it out to you on a brand new computer.
Well, somebody did that intentionally. The corporate headquarters said that they don't know is the truth. Or maybe they didn't really know.
No, from what I've read, when I saw it, it was purely unintentional. But
well,
the thing about that had concerned me.
With the virus.
Yeah, the thing that concerned me was that what if that kind of thing certain plants were compromised and terrorists, you know, specifically targeted certain computers that are coming here to the States and put viruses in them.
But it is happening.
Not on a scale that it could be. Maybe it was the way they spun in the article, but when I read it seemed like a very isolated incident.
I think it's Estonia. Did you ever hear about that one country that completely had gotten hacked by Russia?
Yeah.
Was it Estonia? Which one do you remember what it was?
I don't know, but it was an Eastern European country.
Yeah.
It was like shut down for like a whole day, right?
No, a couple days.
It
was down for 3 weeks.
Okay, I didn't know it was 3 weeks. It was in Wired magazine.
Yeah,
I read about it in Wired magazine.
Yeah, I mean, this country, the whole country, this affected them financially so badly. Even supermarkets, stop lights, traffic lights. I mean, think about it. Everything we do has computerized, right?
Yeah, it was like an apocalyptic kind of.
Yeah, because of some, I believe it started because of a statue or something like that, that the Russians got pissed off because these guys had begun to gain their independence. They're more considered westernized now rather than easternized, okay?
Hmm.
In fact, I do believe that their president has American ties.
Hmm.
If you ever heard this man speak, he sounds like, looks like an a total American.
Or he watches a lot of our TV.
No, maybe so. I don't know. This guy, I think, is an American, okay? But don't quote me completely. But he does, well, but you can go watch him yourself and make your decision, okay?
Well, now you got to send me the link so people can see for themselves what we're talking about.
Well, pardon?
Now you got to send me the link to this. We'll look up this story and link to it from the
book. Actually, I remember how I found out again was when I put country and then cyber terrorism. So you can, if viewers want to do it really quickly, you can go ahead and watch. I'm talking about this.
Keep talking, and I'll see if I can find it.
Okay, there you go. So anyways, I mean, it does happen. It is happening. A lot of the times we don't even know when it's happening. I mean, look, for example, Washington State here in San Diego, your state, driver license bureaus had been hacked into.
Yeah, but they sort of play that down. You don't really. They sort of play it down because, understandably so, you don't want to advertise.
Right. I mean, schools. I mean, literally millions of people's names have been compromised on a year. What about what happened with the Veterans of America? Because of that one particular computer
right.
Who got compromised. It was like, what, 300 million? Wait, what was it, 30 million? Whatever was it? How was that ridiculously high number, right?
Mm.
All these vets, all their information had been compromised.
I found the article we were talking about.
Thank you.
The article here, I'm finding it, is from the Guardian. The headline is, Russia accused of unleashing cyber war to disable Estonia.
It was Estonia.
It was from May 07. It was not recent. But I do remember.
That's recent. That's a year, less than a year ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, recent as far as a few weeks ago. But,
oh, okay.
You know, this story is from May 07. So it is sort of recent, but not very, very recent.
But think about it. Something that massive.
Yeah.
How few people know about this? And that's scary. Why do they keep playing down something as important as that? Because that shows how easy it could even happen to us.
I tell you what else is scary. Now, this is more recent than that. I know why we get into this technology talk, but you know how I think it was Pakistan recently had blocked YouTube because of something that they showed that they didn't think it was very nice to show in their country, and they ended up blocking YouTube for like everybody.
No,
you remember, was it Pakistan or was it China? I know China does censorship all the time. I think it was, I want to say Pakistan, had blocked YouTube and ended up blocking for everybody for like several hours. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay. I didn't hear about this one.
All right, I'll keep talking while I look it up.
Okay.
But see, we really should be more prepared when we talk to these shows.
Okay. At least we come up to some, we were pretty close to all the information, though. That's what counts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I'm going to look to see, I'm going to look it up. Okay, hey, here you go. I'm good.
See how good he is, guys? He just wanted the opportunity to show off his skills.
It was cited in the BBC News on February 26th. And, it was Pakistan.
Okay.
It was Pakistan. I'll put a link to it on the blog post for this podcast as well. But the long and short of it is Pakistan didn't like something they saw on YouTube, so they blocked it. But when they blocked it, they did it in such a way that everybody couldn't get into YouTube for a period of time. It was done by accident. It was sort of like a perfect storm kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they could do it again intentionally, but it did happen. And I think it's interesting that someone in another country can block other countries across borders.
I mean, you know, for us, it's so naive. It's like some people say, oh, we won't be able to regulate the Internet. I'm like, do you know how easy it would be to regulate the Internet?
I don't know that's easy. I wouldn't say it's easy.
You
got different countries all over the world. Each one have their own tax situation. Then you got the different valuations of the dollar or the euro or the rupee or whatever.
There's so many big servers that things come through, okay, especially in the United States. If you're sending me information, I'm sending you information, it's coming through some particular service, and that's so easy to regulate.
So you're saying you're regulated by whatever country the server is hosting the website?
I don't think you have to do it that far either. I mean, like, for example, let's say the government wanted to regulate anything that is in America. All right. All they gotta do
in America, well, talk about more outsourcing. Heck, if this is going to cost me money to operate here, I'll just set up a server in Estonia.
It still has to come back into America, or Russia, or Serbia.
So what now?
It still has to come back into America. It still has to come
right.
in.
Right, if the actual property is being disturbed.
Your phone lines, it's still using your cables.
But if the actual server where the signal is coming from is in another country, then why should I'd be liable to pay?
Because of interstate commerce? Because of that kind
That's
of
overstate. It's international.
Gonna get lost on this here, okay? For example, just because I have a business in, say, Utah, okay, but I'm calling somebody in New York.
But that's our country. You're still in the United States. What if calling somebody and they're in Serbia?
Okay, so let's say your computer is in Serbia, but your presence, your physical presence is in New York.
Yeah.
You're still in New York territory.
But not the server itself.
Doesn't matter. You physically are still in New York.
Okay, let's say I'm looking at a website right now, and the server is in Serbia. And do I have to pay taxes or be aware of Serbian tax laws here in the States, even though I'm here in the States, the actual server is somewhere else? I mean,
well, you're going to have to definitely be aware of your tax laws. And, yes, Serbia could possibly come after you depending on their tax laws. I know for a fact, like in the Caribbean says, hey, just because you're in America, if you're doing business in the Caribbean, you still have to pay us taxes too. And then I also have to pay California taxes because I live and reside in California. So, like, for a lot of these companies who try to do shelters, like, let's, for example, use Tyco.
Right.
Why do you think Tyco got in some trouble for this?
Mm.
They try to put this little Bermuda, or was it Bahamas, a little, you know, office that was about the size of a shoebox, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they call this little office their headquarters. But their actual real-life headquarters were in Florida. Huge, massive building, right?
Yeah.
But they try to do this as a tax shelter. Well, doesn't work that way. You can try to get around it, but they still come after you.
I think it's all kind of wacky. And I tell you something else that's kind of wacky, since we're on news stories.
Uh-huh.
There were these guys who happened to be Spanish.
Okay.
They were on the street somewhere in Pennsylvania, and they accosted two men. And, I can't really say allegedly because they went through court and everything. So they jumped on two guys and said, hey, you got any marijuana? Empty your pockets. And when they emptied their pockets, they hit them aside the head and said, get out of here. And they showed them their gun, and the guys, you know, ran away. Well, the kids who did this, and I say kids because they're 17 to 22 in age, it was four of them, they got caught by the police. And when it got time to be sentenced for their crime, this judge, who had a reputation for creative sentencing, said, you know what, instead of sending you directly to jail, as I suppose I should, and instead of convicting you for conspiracy to commit robbery and other things, I'm going to sentence you to learn English. And you will have to learn English, earn a GED, and get a full-time job by a certain amount of time, I think within a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know English in a year, if you don't have a GED, and if you don't have a job, then you're going to go to jail
for
at least 2 years.
For 2 years, yeah.
For at least 2 years. I think they got off so easy.
Well, yeah, they got off. So here's the issue. I mean, I'm like, okay, is the ACLU, you're going to have a field day with this or not?
They're not always my favorite people.
And I like them, by the way. But
I
thought, okay, look, I mean, first off, being forced to have to speak English,
Hold on.
You can't afford it. But
what?
Then I listened, read the sentence, and I thought, but dang, they did get off light.
They hit me somebody upside the head.
Yeah.
All their money.
So they were. So like you said, I think if he came and said, look, you got a choice. Speak English or go to jail longer. I guess maybe, but I mean, you're still making someone be forced to speak English.
Well, see, this I think with the judge, and I'm going to try to step inside the judge mindset because I don't know, I'm not this judge, but I think the judge looked at these kids and said, you know what, I can send them to jail, and their life they're already on the way down and out.
Mm-hmm.
Put them in jail, they're only going to come out, you know, worse or criminals.
Which is what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah,
like,
so he's giving it to the judge is really giving them a second chance.
Yeah.
Really. You mean,
and I see that good point. It's like, hey, I'm going to give you an opportunity to try to improve yourself by speaking English, which, by the way, that's a total stereotype. Okay.
Well, it's not stereotype in this sense. They did not speak English when they were in jail. When they were being sentenced, they had to have a translator there.
Okay. Now let me bring.
They spoke no English.
Here.
At least that's how they played it. I mean,
let
maybe
me
they
play
did.
Play it this way. You're black, and you have been told that you either learn you cannot speak Nubonics.
I don't speak.
And you must. I'm not talking about you, but this way, like, the person's black, and they're told you cannot speak Nubonics. You have to learn to speak English fluently, properly, and without any.
That's not the same thing.
Very well.
That's not the same thing.
It's the same thing.
That's like saying it's a dialect of English. You can still understand them in some capacity. Just like if you go into, it's like if you're in the South and someone says, hey, you all come over here. Y'all come over here.
No, come on. There are some
who understand what they're saying, even though you're not familiar with that particular dialect.
English. I went to Missouri, and I'm sorry. When I was up in Missouri, there are some people up there. I could not understand a lick of what they were saying.
The dialect was throwing you. But it was English.
No, it was the Nubonics that was throwing me. I had no clue and how they spoke when what the words they were using. I've never really listened to the street Nubonics. And so the factor is that these individuals, I mean, I could not comprehend a single word that they were saying. So I'm looking at it this way. You know, we're in America, and you should not be forced to speak any words or anyhow. You know, you have a civil rights.
Well, English is the language of the United States. It's actually, and it's sort of the official business language of business, too.
Yeah, this is why this is tough, because I kind of agree with what the judge did. I really, really do. So don't get me wrong, guys, because to me, I look at it as, hey, you know, he really is giving them an opportunity to try to, you know, push the envelope and to try to better themselves. But then again, he's also making a judgment call, though. He's trying to say that unless you learn English, you won't be better.
Unless they learn English, their quality of life is not going to be as well as it could.
Because there's a lot. Okay, the guy who's still you know that English is a cycle. That English, that Spanish channel on.
Yeah, Telemundo or
Univision. Oh yeah, right. The guy's multi-hundred-two-thousand millionaire. Do you think he speaks English very well?
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't.
Okay. And now, what about also, what's her name?
Not speaking English, does that mean you cannot be successful, is what I'm saying.
Exactly, and that's kind of like what he's kind of making a judgment call on. He's making that assumption by saying.
Well, let me ask you this. You take this, and I don't want to be stereotypical at all, but you take an average Spanish-speaking person here in the country.
Mm-hmm.
More likely than not, they know some English.
Absolutely.
Because you have to know it to be. To get around in this country. Just like if I went to France and I don't speak any French, I have to learn it if I'm going to get around at least to go to the store or find out where the gas
is. No, then you are being strict. Then you haven't lived in California and you haven't lived in Texas. There's a lot of little communities that people actually live and work in, and they can't speak one lick of English. I mean,
but you know what? That's limiting their potential.
Is it? I mean, because they sell to their own, they live in their own, and they work in their own. I mean, that's, again.
That's true. But look how much money you could make.
But
look how much money you could make if you go outside your community.
And maybe they don't want to. I mean, again, what we are saying is, let's look at this here, okay? And I'm enjoying what you're saying here, but what you perceive to be successful may not be what somebody else perceives as successful. Somebody may perceive making $500 a month as success.
That's true, too.
So, you know, this, again, is very, very subjective. What his comment was, to me, I agree with what he did.
Just gave him a lifeline.
I think he had really great intent.
Just gave him a lifeline.
But it is, to me, I also see an issue of where it could be considered to be very subjective and also very stereotypical. Because he's saying, unless you learn English, unless you get a GED, you might not amount to anything.
Well,
and that's kind of what he's saying. You got to have a GED. It's like next thing he'll say,
you got to go to college.
Right, it's the same thing. Hey, you got to say.
You got to have a basic understanding of reading, writing, arithmetic, and whatever else.
You can do that without having to have a GED.
Well, you can get a GED without having to go into school.
And you can also have a high school diploma and not read a word of English. I mean, what I'm saying is.
True, but when you have a GED, you have at least some semblance that you've accomplished some sort of.
That's a stereotype, too.
Well,
I mean, again,
I mean, that's like, the whole purpose of getting a diploma going to school is that you have some kind of proof that you've at least attended the school, and supposedly you have proof that you have basic knowledge of certain skills.
Now, let's bring this to recruiting. There's a reason the EEOC and the Supreme Court have stated that one does not have to have a GED to be successful, number one, and it could be considered to be discriminatory to ask for a GED or any type of education when you're asking for a job.
Is that a law or is that something that's being debated?
Absolutely. It's part of our EEOC. It can be considered systemic discrimination. Let me tell you, for example, I'm going to give you a lawsuit that happened with a recruiting company not too long ago in Texas. Now, not too long ago could mean within a year. Okay, guys, please forgive me, all right? Company, I think it was in San Antonio, Texas. Please also correct me if I've chosen the city wrong, but it was in Texas. There was this Hispanic worker, and he's kind of a transient. Every summer, he would go into this particular recruiting agency, get to work for a particular company, and I guess what he was doing was picking some vegetation, okay?
Yep.
It was a hands job, all right? Obviously, you didn't need to have a GED to do this job.
Right.
And so they didn't turn around, and next time he comes in was a couple summers ago, and they said, hey, no, you have to have your GED. He said, well, I never had to have that before. They said, nope, you do need it now. He said, heck no. He filed discrimination, and guess what? He won.
So in that particular case, he won because it wasn't essential to that particular job.
Actually, with what the Supreme Court said, and let me see if I can find that really fast, okay? Because I can actually quote this if I can find it. Well, I'll talk whilst I...
Well, you know why you do that? I'll make another point. It's so bizarre to me, and I can say bizarre because I'm doing it myself. You go to any other country, like you go to India or even Canada or some other country, people speak more than one language. They speak the official language, and they speak possibly a native language and something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the United States is the only country that's not required that you speak an additional language outside of English.
Actually,
it's kind of bizarre.
You can't in America to require a person to speak only English. You cannot do that.
If you had a law that said you must speak English and you must speak two other languages, then I could see that's kind of bizarre. But if you're in America, you have to speak English. I mean,
you
just to survive. I mean, not saying legally, but by law. I'm just saying that if you're in a community of English-speaking people,
Okay.
Have to speak English to get a better reach your full potential, which you could do. Even if you stay in a community where English is downplayed, is not that essential, how would you know that someone isn't going to cheat you out of something if you don't speak the language?
Same way that a blind man is going to also hope that when he's giving a person a $5 bill, he's really giving them a $5 bill and they're not going to cheat him.
That's a lot of trust.
I mean, you have to.
That's
unfortunately what happens. I mean, the thing is, I mean, a lot of people, and this is where a lot of things get kind of confused, and that's why the things that they try to protect, what we call the ignorant or the people who don't have, you know, because we do try to trust that people aren't going to help hurt us, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's like what the Supreme Court was saying, I mean, in regards to education, not just education, all right, is that when it's called something called systemic discrimination.
Systemic discrimination.
Right. That basically certain things can create a discrimination against a specific group or a specific race.
Right.
And in regards to education, and especially in some cities and some states, you will find that, for example, blacks are less likely to graduate.
In certain states.
And certain cities.
Certain cities, sorry.
Okay. Some certain cities and certain states, it might be Hispanics.
Right.
Predominantly Mexicans.
Right.
It is, and some certain cities and certain states, Asians, for example, have higher propensity for IT and certain jobs. Actual facts, okay? I'm not just saying this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so here's what the Supreme Court stated in their total, and as the Supreme Court stated in one of its earliest interpretations of Title VII. Okay, this is discrimination.
Yep.
History is filled with examples of men and women who rendered highly effective performance without the conventional badges of accomplishments in terms of certificates, diplomas, and degrees. Diplomas and tests are useful servants, but Congress has mandated that the common sense proposition that they are not to become masters of reality. So, Title VII provides that if a selection standard is shown to have a significant impact based upon race, the employer must demonstrate that the standard is job-related and consistent with business necessity. Thus, employers should be sure to measure the person for the job and not the person from the abstract. Now, a company could say, oh, well, that's business reality necessity for a person to have a GED to fold, to make beds in hotels and restaurants. I mean, in hotels, okay?
Right.
Problem is, the bed's not going to speak to them. So that really isn't business necessity. So then they can say, well, I need to have them speak to so-and-so. Well, then, you know, what's reasonable accommodation? If they have a tremendous amount of people who are Hispanic, folding laundry, et cetera, and there is a person there who does speak English and Spanish, reasonable accommodation.
But isn't that an added expense for a company?
Not really, because especially if you're in a let's say, for example, like in Utah, okay,
right,
or in other companies, if you are going to hire a tremendous number of people and, for example, again, the chances of you being able to hire someone that speaks English and Spanish is like high, especially like in California.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I mean, almost logical.
Right.
That's going to happen. Also in New York, a lot of Puerto Ricans there.
Yeah, a few.
Okay, and so out of that regards, yeah, business necessity states, that bed isn't going to care if that person speaks Spanish. And you can give that person directions in English as well as Spanish. Not that hard to, you know, create the directions in paper and give it to them. That bed doesn't care. That chair doesn't care. The dishes don't care what language that person's speaking in.
Right.
So there comes business necessity. Business necessity with Nubonics, for example, if I have a person speaking on the phone professionally all the time and they need to speak to people and this person is hard or difficult to understand, that's business necessity. So I don't really – so that means that I'm sorry, you don't articulate very well and I need you to be able to articulate professionally as a performance app. That's a minimum objective qualification. Then yes. So going back to this judge.
Oh, wait a minute. So a company could say, I didn't hire him because he could not speak well enough to do this job, and that person cannot come back and sue them for that.
Oh, well, no, wait, slow down. That's only if the company made that initially an objective of their job. They better have put that as initial objective of their job.
They put in their job description that it is required that you speak articulate, that you can articulate the Queen's English properly.
Because your job means that you're going to be on the phone consistently, yes. If your job is going to be talking to beds, no, it's not going to work.
All right. So as long as it's spelled out properly in a job description.
And it better be related to the job.
And it has to be related to the job.
Yeah.
That company is sort of somewhat protecting themselves from frivolous lawsuits from potential.
Right. I mean, you can't just automatically say, well, I need you to speak English.
Right.
Because I want to. No, that's not going to work.
Mm.
You have to show just cause. Obviously, professionally, you're a professional company. The person spends 90% of their job doing – a perfect example is Dial. I'll give you guys a case with OFCCP and Dial, okay?
Yep.
Brilliant case to explain what we're talking about.
Mm.
Dial decided to go ahead –
This is the company. This is Dial Soap for people who don't know.
They decided they wanted their individual women, especially the Domily, to be able to lift 50 pounds or more. Now, they decided this at random. And so they created this basically a physical test that if you couldn't lift 50 pounds or more, you could either be fired, terminated, or cannot be hired from the position.
Okay.
Now, the job really didn't entail consistently, allegedly, what I heard, okay? So, again, correct me if I'm wrong, okay, but I'm going based upon hearsay, okay? The job did not entail that the individuals lift 50 pounds or more on a consistent basis. Maybe that was like maybe 2-3% of their job, okay? So reasonable accommodation could be made
right.
for this, okay? So, and also, they never required this before.
So why did they throw it up there?
This job before doing that, right?
So why? How did it enter into the whole conversation of this?
Well, OCP said, hey, you know what? This is systemic discrimination. You're discriminating against these women. And I said, but you know what? It's costing us money in workman's comp. These people are getting hurt on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Where the OCP said, look, that's not the really true nature of their job. You can make reasonable accommodation for certain people to be able to do that lifting. Because it's not the majority of what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And before, by the way, you had made this a requirement, and these people were doing their job without this requirement. But they said they're getting hurt on the job. It's making our workman's comp go up through the roof. And they said, nope, it's not a minimum objective qualification. Why make reasonable accommodation?
You know, you give me a lot of food for thought and a lot of food for thought for our listeners. If you have any questions or comments about any of this information that Karen and I have been ranting about for the past 30 minutes, feel free to send us an email. You can reach Karen at karen@jimstroud.com or me at jimstroud@jimstroud.com. And also, incidentally, I didn't mention this at the beginning. I suppose I should have, but jimstroud.com has changed. It is now therecruiterslounge.com. That's T-H-E. recruiterslounge.com.
Are we going to change our email address, too?
You know, we probably will eventually, so yeah. But for now, they can still reach us at the email addresses that I said before, karen@jimstroud.com or jimstroud@jimstroud.com.
Ee-hoo!
So,
hey, everybody, this one was a good one. Jim actually argued with me.
On the phone as opposed to just off the line like we normally.
Yeah, that is so cool. And you talked as well.
On that note, we will talk to you later. Say bye-bye, Karen.
Oh, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for this show. You've been a wonderful audience. If you like what you heard, love what you heard, or just plain hate what you just heard, let me know. Your feedback matters. You can reach me through my website at jimstroud.com/podcast. That's jimstroud.com/podcast. So until next time, I'm Jim Stroud, and you're not.
Radio, radio, radio talent.
Innovative audio on demand.